Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Attention all Wayniacs, the 25th anniversary of Wayne's World is fast approaching. 25 years since Wayne and Garth became bigger than sketches on Saturday Night Live, and Mike Myers and Dana Carvey were first catapulted to movie stardom. To celebrate the birthday of cinema history's most excellent comedy, the Hayden Orpheum Picture Palace in Cremorne, Sydney is putting on a special screening on Friday, February 10th at 9 p.m. All tickets are $12. Seeing Wayne's World with a crowd was the most incredible night of my life, and seeing it in one of Australia's most beautiful cinemas will only make it feel all the more special. Cameron and I will be there goofing it up. Party time excellence guaranteed. Friday, February 10th at 9 p.m. All tickets are $12 at the Hayden Orpheum in Cremorne in Sydney. Ticket links in the podcast description, guys. Party on. Also, Horny Babies, just a quick reminder that Greenlights Comedy Nights, the comedy room that I've been running for the last 5 years, is starting up again on January the 27th. It's a Friday night. It's 8 p.m. Becky Lucas is headlining. It's only $10. We've got other great acts such as Reese Nicholson, Ray Badron, Laura Hughes, all former great guests of this podcast, and many more will be performing that night. It's only $10. It's at the Gaelic Club in Surry Hills in Sydney, right near Central Station. The 27th of January, Friday night, 8 p.m. right behind Central, $10 at the Gaelic Club. I'll see you there.
It's my check. It's my check. The podcast by Mike Myers. And we clear.
So we get this little guy out there.
Oh, what? Why?
Oh, no.
Why did you bring that? This is an audio medium.
I wanted to just bring Little Austin so it could inspire
us. Oh my god, it has a fucking mole. It has an accurate mole on the cheek. Oh, but everything else is inaccurate.
That looks exactly like the young Austin.
Yeah, it looks more like the third actor to play Austin Powers.
Oh my god.
Which we can get into. All right,
kick Let's it do it. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and most importantly, horny babies. And welcome to another episode of Mic Check with Cameron James and Alexi Toliopoulos, the only podcast where two comedians go through the entire filmography of their hero, Mike Myers, baby, just to check if they're still good. My name is Alexi Toliopoulos.
And my name is Cameron James, and it's a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to be anywhere with you, baby.
But can I just say something? You're not wearing your hat. What's going on?
Well, I started sweating, so I just put it on my lap with a little baby Austin Powers doll on top of it.
Just for the listeners, just for the Wayniacs out there, Alexi brings a little Austin Powers doll to every single... I'll take a photo of it.
Yeah.
There's no need for it to be here. You guys can't see it. And all it does is make me uncomfortable because it is fucking terrifying in every possible sense of the word. But it's here with us and it adds to the vibe, that's for sure. Do you feel shame?
Yes, I think I do feel shame. I'm capable of many emotions. I am actually an empath. That's one of my qualities I bring to the show, is I have a broad spectrum of emotions and they're very deep.
Yeah, or a Shrektrum of emotions.
That's true, a Shrektrum. But Shrektrum is more limited. It's more just angry and swamp-fueled.
Okay.
It's all these two emotions.
How about you and Trey, our very special guests?
Well, we have two guests today to discuss the film Austin Powers in Goldmember.
Mm.
Our first guest is a returning guest of the podcast, back by popular demand. It's Mr. Tom Walker.
Hello.
Hello, baby. How are you?
Oh, groovy, baby. Thank you. So the greetings of our peoples are exchanged.
And we have a new guest. I'm very excited to welcome him to the Mic Check Republic. We're pumped to have you here. Fan of the show. I'm just going to assume that you are. Because we haven't listened to it at all, but you will be by the end of this one. But we're a fan of yous. It's Mike Wing. Welcome, Hing.
Hello.
Hey, baby.
Hey, baby.
I love it that in your introduction of Michael, it's just like, yeah, we don't know this guy. He's not our friend. It's just the way it was all set up.
This guy, we've been around him a lot, but we don't know how
he's
he
a friend of
art.
Comedy. Actually, I was going to intro you as a friend of comedy, as an awesome roast.
Does your ironic personality re-comedy, does that exist on this podcast as well?
Oh, here's the thing. Everything that I legitimately feel about comedy, I have to say in an ironic tone now. I've noticed. Like, the other night, I was like, oh, I love comedy. And I do love comedy. It's
so
fucked.
You're a crippled and broken man.
And I had a really deep, ironic discussion about how much I love Louis C.K. the other day that was just like a conversation I would have had normally. It was fucked.
Made it ironic? Was it just the fact that you were like talking like someone who'd just done an open mic for the first time?
Pretty
you
much.
You were still saying all the things you still felt?
Yeah, I kept saying he's undeniable.
You've got irony poisoning, man.
It's fucked me up, and I'm trying to be more earnest now, so I want to say this from the bottom of my heart. Thank you both for being on the show.
Fuck off, no.
It genuinely means the world to us.
It does.
What's it all about, guys? What are we talking about today? We're talking about Austin Powers in Goldmember.
Mm-hmm.
So far, the final film in the Austin Powers franchise.
Yeah, that's right. Before we get into that, though, I want to know a little bit about what you guys think of Mike. Now, I've spoken to you about it, Tom, but Hing, what's your relationship like with Mike Myers?
My relationship?
Yeah, where do you start with him?
You know, I loved him growing up. I think all sort of people growing up in the 90s and 2000s who love comedy would have loved Mike Myers because he's such a funny performer.
Yeah.
And then I think it'd be similar to a lot of people. You watch all those films, you love them, and then at some point you just realize something clicks, and you're like, that wasn't right. What was wrong? And then, but you don't feel... What separates you lot from everyone else is that everyone else separates themselves.
I don't like the way you refer to us as you lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying, the pathology you have...
White people?
Is that I was like, something's not right. Like, why did I like those films? But I didn't bother to, like, dig deep.
Sure.
Whereas the fact that you guys have gone back and are rekindling this love-hate relationship, whatever, and reinvestigating is, like, unnecessary and weird and troubling.
You're having your investment in things you loved as a child roasted by a man who now makes a living playing and talking about video games.
And it was real. Like, I felt all that.
No, yeah. I genuinely... You've dragged me into this as well now. So
yes.
I would have been content in my life with never, ever thinking about the Austin Powers franchise forever. But
sure.
Now I've been forced to reckon with not only my judgment as a 14, 13, 15-year-old, whatever, but also... why I thought it was okay to like have fond memories of that as well as an adult. Like I've been affected by this.
Okay, now that's interesting, and that's actually very shagadelic that you brought that up because that is what the point of the show is. We're reinvestigating, reevaluating the work of someone who is considered a comedy auteur, and we're checking if it's still good or not.
Absolutely.
Now, we've had some mixed responses to some of these films. Overall, it's largely been good. But this one in particular, Austin Powers in Goldmember, full title, is the one that I think was always going to be the dividing line.
I think so.
Yeah, because there are consensus across the board is 50-50.
It's mixed at best.
Do you want to quickly go around the horn and go positive or negative thumbs up, thumbs
no,
down?
No, that's the end.
I can't do that.
Can you just listen to one fucking episode of our show?
Well, I can't get through one episode. Anyway, it's not...
Well, we can't... You know what? Because I don't think I'm going to 100% decide on how I feel about it until the end of this discussion.
Okay. Absolutely.
And Tom, just to recap, you're a Mike fan or not? I can't even remember. Do you like him? It's hard to tell with people anymore. What do you think?
Well, it's hard because also this project has changed my feelings about Mike a lot, because as I've uncovered more and more details about the man, I've found it impossible to hate him, because as soon as you understand that a lot of someone's projects are fueled by a need to make peace with their dead father, and that's like the...
It's very humanizing.
Yeah.
Deeply humanizing.
Yeah, and the more interviews we've watched with him, the more you go, that is all that his
career clip of
is
him
about.
Singing What's New Pussycat to Barack Obama is still the worst video I've ever seen.
It's harrowing.
It's really harrowing.
It's a ghost. It's a ghost doing it. It's a ghost's performance.
It's real bad. Everything about that video, I wish we didn't think about it again, but it's everything about it. He's honoring his father. He's honoring the great Burt Bacharach, who is like a father to him in his mind, in that weird kind of weird psychological
The great thing
way.
About Mike is that he's gained far more fathers than he's lost.
That's right.
He recruited...
Everyone is Mike's dad.
Yeah. He got Michael Caine to play his father.
Let's get into it, guys. Okay. Let's start talking about Austin Powers in Goldmember.
He is brilliant. He is deadly. And he is still surrounded by frickin' idiots.
Think!
This summer...
I am a sexy beast!
Secrets will be revealed.
Lower the globe!
Lower the globe!
Ow! Ow!
I'm okay! Release the meteor!
Oh! No way! Where's the bomb?
One of our best agents has been kidnapped. It's your father.
An evil pact.
Who has my father? The aptly named Goldmember.
A dangerous mission.
Where can I find this Goldmember?
1975.
He is, ladies and gentlemen. It's Goldmember!
I am from Holland. Isn't that weird?
Yes. New Line Cinema presents...
Oh, I'd like to have a go with that, Philly.
Shut your mouth.
Mike Myers.
I haven't laughed that hard since I was a little girl, thank you.
Introducing Beyoncé Knowles.
Huh?
And Michael Caine.
This is the synopsis as provided by the back of my Blu-ray cover.
You bought this on Blu-ray?
Yes, so what am I going to do, not spend money on this podcast? I've only spent about $3,000 to get this off the ground.
It's an investment, baby.
The mission for Austin... Okay, wait, let me start again.
Oh, Jesus, the mission...
I'll show you how bad it is written. The mission for Austin, shake booty in glittery roller disco days of 1975 and rescue his suave spy dad, as played by Michael Caine, from the scheme of Dr. Evil. The mission... Freaky, flaky member. This is real bad.
This is a nightmare of a synopsis. We get the idea. Austin's on a mission with his father, and the villain is Goldmember.
Yeah. And Dr. Evil.
And Dr. Evil.
And Fat Bastard is back again.
Yeah. He's back, baby. Now, I want to draw one little problem I have with that synopsis so far. Mm-hmm. You said Austin Powers as played by Mike Myers. That is true, but not... Strictly true.
Not strictly true.
Austin Powers is in fact played by three actors, and they are so far the only three actors to portray the character that I'm aware of. I can't wait for more in the future. I'm seeing, you know, your Zac Efrons.
When is Idris Elba finally going to become the new Austin Powers?
I know,
hashtag
right?
Donald Glover for Austin Powers 4.
That's what I want to see. Now, Tom Cruise kicks off the movie as Austin Powers, and that is funny, question mark?
Okay, so here is my stance. I think the first 10 or so minutes of this movie, right up until I think it cuts to Austin in his pad singing Daddy Wasn't There. Mm-hmm. That is the cutoff point to the movie being good for me. But that, up until that point, I think this movie is real funny.
Yeah.
That first like 10 minutes or so makes me laugh real hard.
But the thing about that first 10 minutes is, I think it's like, they've done two. So just as a bit of historical context for this film, right? Mm. The first film makes, what, $70 million or something like that, yeah. right? The second film is the big one that makes $200 million, something crazy. Mm. And so there's a lot of expectation riding on this film because the first one was kind of funny. The second one made a lot of money. So this third film, they feel like they have to really raise the stakes. So how do they do that? They have this 7-minute opening gag, which is a film within a film with like all these hot like Hollywood actor cameos, right? One of them's Tom Cruise. There's Steven Spielberg shows up.
Gwyneth Paltrow. Gwyneth Paltrow plays a character called Dixie Normus, which I think is
that is the worst the laziest part. Because it also doesn't make sense for that to be her in the Austin-verse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we know Austin is a swinger baby. He swings maybe both ways. Mm. He does shag his own self in one of the movies.
Are you saying that Gwyneth Paltrow might play first trans character in Austin Powers?
In the Austin Powers universe,
She may be. It is called Austin Pussy, so maybe we don't know what happens in the rest of the movie. We can only assume that perhaps Austin grows his own
so he can shag himself.
So he can shag himself once
very
again.
Very groovy.
Maybe it's a gender swapper.
It's interesting that you find this really, really funny, Tom, because my reaction to this, for watching the first 7 minutes of this film, this like parody opening trailer thing where Tom Cruise is this like suave, sophisticated Austin who then is doing the ironic catchphrases a second time around. Like, what I thought immediately when I saw that was like parody dates so badly because parody has to be very specific for it to be good.
Yeah.
And so it makes sort of like a Britney Spears film clip, which is such an early 2000s thing.
That's very dated.
Oh, that is the low point of this 10 minutes for sure.
And the whole thing like Quincy Jones is doing the score. Like again, like a really specific weird moment. And I just thought when I was watching this, I was like, it dates so badly.
Well, yeah. Okay, so the Tom Cruise thing, I think, is still... It stands up because he's still a huge superstar.
That's what I mean, though. Yeah. So it raises the stakes, which is a success.
And Danny DeVito saying, it's me, I'm Mini-Me.
I'm fucking Mini-Me. Yeah. All right, that's inspired.
Out loud,
that is inspired.
I'm Mini-Me is the funniest line that is, in the film.
That's inspired.
By far. The character that never talks. Danny DeVito screaming.
It's me, I'm fucking Mini-Me. And then giving the
and
finger.
Just shooting a machine gun into the air.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
See, the other thing I was really struck by in this opening sequence is the singing in the rain. There's a moment where there's a singing in the rain parody, and I because this is the first Mike Myers film I watched in probably, I don't know, since this came out. Cinema probably, right?
Yeah, right.
And I was just struck by how fucking good he is as a performer.
Oh yeah.
Like his dancing is so funny.
Well, he's a trained tap dancer.
Yeah, and I'm just mesmerized by this, and everyone else is in these like bright shiny raincoats, and he's tap dancing in a fully wet suit. Like he's just drenched, and it's so funny.
He's a very good physical performer, and this type of performing is where he shines. I think where it's kind of like it's like being on stage. It's like it's like SNL. Like he's kind of doing a review,
and that's kind of what he wants to be doing. I think.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly where I stand on this movie. Having seen it again, I kind of was a little bit more cautious going into it. But then every time I see his face up on the screen during that intro, I just was like, God, I love this boy.
This guy
boy.
Knows how to mug.
I love this boy. He's the best.
He's fucking good.
And I've got some information about this opening scene as well, because it is so well made, this whole Austin Pussy sequence. And
stop saying
I would love for you to stop saying that.
It's no, I'm going to allow it.
Yeah, it's called Steven Spielberg's Austin Pussy.
Oh.
And so this scene in the script for Austin Powers in Gold Member, it's just written as like Austin Pussy trailer. That's all they have really written down.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jay Roach developed this by himself without Mike, just kind of creating this sequence together and designed it completely. Mm-hmm. And then the second unit guys went into direct it, including Marco Schnabel, who would later go on to direct The Love Guru.
Oh, really?
So this was like kind of his first big
this
outing.
A start.
Yeah.
Classic log rolling of Hollywood.
So he was directed by the second unit director.
Yeah.
Because it looks great.
It looks fantastic.
Yeah.
But they would have thrown money behind this because, again, this is about, it's the opening sequence. So it's telling you, the viewer, like, this is raising the stakes. You've seen the funny one. You've seen the kind of like sequels of that. And now this is the big budget,
the big
huge
one.
Film. We've got Beyonce in it. It's going to be massive. Yeah.
I'm with you, Tom. I think the start is great, and up until about that point, I was like, it feels like Like they made it for the MTV Movie Awards or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just like a
yeah.
short film that's funny and is filled with cameos of the time. And I remember thinking, if this was just the intro to a movie awards and then it ended and the host came out on the stage, you'd be like, that was the best Austin
and
Powers
so
thing
good.
Ever.
Yeah.
Austin?
Yeah. That would be the best.
Well, if Borat hosted the awards, why not get Austin in?
But,
what would happen if Sacha Baron Cohen had to accept an award?
Oh,
jeez, I would love to see that. I would just die.
What were you saying?
I was going to say those transitions are all beautiful as well, from within the movie to out of the movie, then onto Dr. Evil living in the Hollywood sign. Mm. I think they're all really great. And I must come to defense of Mr. Quincy Jones after you call him dated, because I think one of my favorite lines of the movie, the only person who says groovy baby better than Austin is Quincy Jones in that little sequence. When he says it, it makes me so happy.
I think, though, and this is one of my favorite things, is that Quincy Jones doesn't say groovy baby. He says, groovy, yes.
Yeah. I think that's why I like
it's
it.
So good. Yeah. Clearly just not quite understanding what's happening or
Austin.
Why he should do it.
Yeah, it's so funny. And I think as well, that's I learned this, that Austin Powers, when it was in development, it was going to be a little bit more different until he heard the soul bossa nova by Quincy Jones for the first time, and it completely changed everything and brought all that life and energy into it.
So when he says, this is where our movie gets its mojo from, he means it.
That's another case of Mike Myers barely hiding a genuine sentiment behind just doing it in character as Austin Powers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is that the... What's New Pussycat of this movie?
I don't know if you know this, Tom, but often comedians, they use their jokes to talk about their real emotions. And I don't know if you've ever done that. Tom Walker, whose dick I've seen on stage several times.
Dick
Tom
is
Walker,
an emotion,
who
and I
just shat in my house with the door open.
Shat on a turtle.
Great line from that, by the way. All right, so we kick it off now. I want to talk about a couple of things that I found funny that I really was... not expecting to find funny again.
Yeah.
Because I watched this maybe a year ago. I think it was before we started this podcast.
Yeah.
And I remember texting you and going, Austin Powers and Goldmember is so not funny and so dated.
Yeah.
And so I watched it again the other night and I was getting all ready for it, ready to hate it. And I could not stop laughing at all the mole jokes.
Really?
I could not stop laughing at it. And I wrote down in my notes.
I'm looking at your notes right now.
It just says, mole dash so funny.
So that was best gag for you is Molly, 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 Molly.
I think it's not my favorite gag, but I just... it goes on for so long to the point where I couldn't stop laughing. And I think the bit that gets me is when Dr. Evil goes... like, I don't know. There's something so lame about
that. That is really good.
But I'm trying to separate the your ironic nature out here. Like, there are so many things in this film that I find funny because they're bad jokes that Mike Myers is telling on purpose to be bad jokes. For example, when Goldmember is introduced and he says, "I'm Dutch," that's pretty weird.
Yeah.
That is that is like a really funny fucking moment.
Yeah.
Because there's this weird self-hate about the film and what he's doing.
That's true. That's almost like Mike Myers is saying to the audience, "Yeah, I know, I'm doing another accent."
Yeah. Right? Whereas that Molly, Molly, Molly bit, I feel like you're laughing at because you think it's kind of lame in parts, but I think they genuinely thought it was funny. Or do you genuinely think it's funny? Because I can't tell what I can't tell.
It's hard to pull it all apart now.
I know it is hard to tell because there is a part of me that's I'm laughing at his performance
because he's naturally very very funny.
He's a very funny person.
Yeah.
But maybe I think on paper, if someone had pitched that to me, if someone said, and then he just like keeps saying mole over and over again, I'd probably go, "Hey, you could probably lose that scene."
So I watched this at the audio director's commentary with Mike and Jay Roach on it. Mm-hmm. And when they're talking about that scene, they said that it was like 10 times longer.
I bet.
And they had to keep cutting it back and cutting it back. And that became like code for them to go, "We're going to make this snappier."
Right.
Oh,
and
make
in
it more
some
like the
cases, that did not work. In some cases, they could have used even more snap.
Because
that's one of the things that really made me love the opening of the film, was that every part of it was so intentional.
Mm.
And it was bereft of those moments in Austin Powers, I think, where you can clearly be like, "Oh, well, here is where they've turned to Mike and they've said, 'Mike, go nuts.
Just go with it.'"
Yeah, they've turned to him and they've said, "Now just do one for you about... 17 to 45 times for 3 hours, and he just riffs. And
but that's like
cut it back.
I think if you take that movie and you cut it differently with those performances, you can still make a much better film. Do you know what I mean? Because I would happily watch Mike Myers do basically anything for 90 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, but I think some of the choices that they've made post-production in this film. sorry, I feel very awkward talking about this because I don't want you to think I hate the film because I genuinely found myself laughing a lot at Mike Myers.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's so much squandered potential in
his comedy.
Are we
all on board by saying that we laughed at this movie a lot more than we thought we would?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Much more. I thought this was going to be a cringy flop, but I laughed out loud. I was watching this alone. Laughing out loud alone while watching a movie is such a test.
Yeah, totally.
There's scenes in it as well that I'd forgotten about or I didn't think I was going to enjoy this time. And one thing that particularly stood out to me that I never really got until this time as to why it was funny, but then it made me like crack it. I cracked my shit up watching this scene.
That's absolutely not a saying.
Not a saying.
Well, my shit was cracked open for this one, guys.
Dude, that is so gross.
Please so when Michael,
you can start saying Austin pussy again if you stop saying my
that's
shit
the trade
has
off,
been cracked.
Okay?
So when Nigel Powers, as played by Michael Caine, is kidnapped and he is trying to make friends with Mini Me by asking to show him his dick. Before in my life, I never realized how strange that is.
But as soon as you approach it with an understanding of social norms.
That is weird, right? I remember just quoting it a lot when I was younger, like baby's arm holding an apple tripod. Like it introduced me to those phrases. Yeah. But when you're watching it now, you're like, that's one grown man just asking to see another man's penis as a form of like... just bonding?
Oh, it's a show dominance.
Yeah, it is kind of a dominance play.
The thing is,
but he's so sweet while doing it. I think that's the funniest thing where he's like encouraging him. It's so sweet and sentimental.
It's not though, because that scene is one of the things that turned me against the film actually.
Really?
Because there's this moment where Michael Caine, quickly, he's trying to convince Mini-Me to come around to his side, befriend him. And he does it by saying that those people out there, Dr. Evil and co, they dehumanize you, right?
Yeah.
So he says that specifically. So clearly the people who wrote this understood that Mini-Me was being dehumanized, right?
Yeah.
But the makers of this film are guilty of exactly that. He doesn't talk. He humps people's legs. He's like he gets thrown against the wall. Like, it's like, if you have the mental faculty to have one of your characters say to another one of the characters, we should treat you like a person. And then you, as a directing, like, writing, producing team, treat this person like a fucking dog.
Just
what
quickly.
What the fuck is going on?
Did you know that Vern Troyer broke into acting by acting as a stunt baby?
Yeah.
So he was a baby out. You could just throw around.
And obviously 2002 is a different time, right? It's 14 years ago.
Yeah, it's better.
It's you know, we've lost a bit of our essence. The towers are down, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
But we've got big things to worry about than political correctness.
The
obviously.
Swamp is just starting to fill.
And Shrek is pissed off about it.
I just was like, I was like, really? Like, this whole film, so many of the jokes of this are like, he's not a real person. He's little, so he's not real.
But I think...
he's got a big dick, dude.
Yeah, I think it's a coincidence that he's little and that he's not real. Because he's a clone, buddy. I don't know if you're forgetting that.
And I think Vern Troyer is a talented enough actor to bring all of the sentimentality and sweetness of that character out into the open, where you can be on board with either of those things, where you're like, he's a great little bloke, Mini-Me. I'm glad he's with the goodies now. But also, it's very funny when Austin puts him in the bag and smashes him with a fry pan. Because he's a little rascal. He's there. He's fought Austin before, and the guy's basically invincible. I mean, he can't really get hurt.
He's clearly also sentient on a higher form because he's able to scribble out pickup lines and hand them to Foxy Cleopatra.
Now, okay, all right. I'm glad we've gone down this hole because we're talking about some things that we're uncomfortable with about the film. That's a good one.
Yeah, please start.
Okay, well, actually, Tom had one that he brought up to me off mic about the... you talked about the opening scene with Austin and his pad.
Yes. Mm. So, and the reason that is such an immediate fall from grace is because just after this wonderful opening scene, we are introduced to the characters of Fook You and Fook Me, who I will note come up when you Google Austin Powers Gold member. The fourth result is who plays Fook You and Fook Me? But yeah, that is such an uncomfortable scene for me. This is, I think, the most racially dubious of the Austin Powers films.
It's not good. It's
by
not
such
good.
A long shot. And that scene is so... Oh, it's so, so good.
So to run people through the scene, what happens is he's approached by one Asian lady...
Uh-huh.
And then there's like sort of some sexual banter, and her name is
I think it's Fook Me.
No, it's Fook You, isn't it? I think. Oh, what? Well, no, whatever.
Fook Me starts first.
Oh, right.
Because she's this cruising is like who's for on a spanking,
first. Right? But it's who wants to fuck the first baseman?
Exactly.
And then she goes away, and then a second person who looks identical, quote unquote, to her arrives. There's confusion, and her name, don't you know, is Fook You. And so then Austin begins having the start of a threesome.
And they show those names by having the girls turn around and show that their names are written on their backpacks, but they are also wearing the shortest skirts possible.
So it's like this weird anime, like Asian schoolgirl, like Japanese schoolgirl kind of moment, right, where it's meant to be like highly sexualized.
Yeah.
And this is...
They say that Austin Powers is very sexiful.
Now, this is the thing, though. This is another problem I have with this film, like trying to decipher what it meant to me. Oh my goodness!
Is this your representation?
But it's like there is a trope.
One day I could fuck Austin.
Maybe
as a young Chinese man.
If only I had a twin.
Hey, look. If Mike Myers can play it in both people in one scene, so can I.
That's true. That's true. Now, would you be on either side of Austin in this?
He'd be the meat.
Okay.
He'd be an Austin sandwich.
He'd be the finger trap.
Yes, yes.
Now,
yes.
That is racist.
So there's a trope. So this film is parodying like spy films and action films, right? And there's a trope in those that James Bond, as aged as he might be, can still hook up with like young hot people. And often those people are like quote unquote exotic, you know, kind of like from the Orient or whatever the fuck, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like watching this being like, okay, is this capital B bad? Or is this like him making fun of a thing that he thinks is capital B bad? Like I don't...
Okay, I see what you're saying.
It is 100% not the latter.
I don't think so either.
There's no way that Mike sat down to write the scene that will finally take down exoticism.
I think he came up with Fook Me and Fook You and thought that was awesome.
Yeah. Or, more likely, Mike Myers has in real life been fucked by twins named Fook You and Fook Me.
Okay.
Drawing on his own personal experience.
Yeah. This is, for me, a real low point in the movie.
100%.
It brings me a little bit back, just the line. I've always had stuck my head where he's like, twins, Basil. I don't know why, but that's always been stuck in my head. But it's so bad. These women aren't even sisters, but it just shows how great the makeup was on this movie. And this woman was able to make them look very similar. There's no defense of this scene. I don't know. I can't defend it.
I would have loved to
funny.
See this scene getting filmed.
Yeah.
I have another problem with the scene that isn't related to the race of them. It's related to the universe of Austin Powers. So when they first approach him, they go, "Oh, Austin Powers, we know you. We love you. You're so funny." So,
well, he's got a movie being made about him, so it's pretty famous for this
point.
But
is he like a comedy superstar
he absolutely is in this universe, and that's one of the things that turns me off Austin Powers. I love Dr. Evil in
these
films.
Because he's not funny. Scene. In the world.
In Austin Powers, if he says a funny line, you have to cut to a reaction shot from someone else in the scene laughing at that line. It kills me. I love it when the character isn't funny.
But isn't that the joke, though? Because all of his jokes suck. So isn't the joke that Mike Myers is making is James Bond always says these corny lines?
Aren't we making
fun of that?
No.
So it's like that whole thing where him, Austin Powers and Nigel Powers, they have this terrible back and forth. They both say like horrible jokes and they go, "Oh, thank you," like that. Mm-hmm. And so that overplaying of that is clearly a parody of that thing that would happen in Bond films.
No, and it is true. And what they describe Austin as, not a fish out of water, but he's a fish out of water that brings his own water around him. And that's all about Austin going around and just truly delighting people.
Oh my God.
With bringing them into his energy. Like,
you've wasted your
movie.
Life.
In-
wasted your fucking life.
Well, it's not a waste, dude, if like me and Cameron are the early ones that are qualified.
We have been emailing people for sponsorship and we have had no responses.
Going back to what Cam was saying, though, about before, just about the sexual inappropriateness of like Japanese schoolgirls, etc. Mm. Was anyone creeped out by the age difference between Beyonce
and Thank you.
Here is the second.
Here this is a paradox I've been obsessed with for a long time. Okay, yeah. Let's break it down. We'll call it the Beyonce age paradox. Okay, so when they first meet up, Beyonce, aka Foxy Cleopatra,
so she says to him.
8 years and no phone call. Nobody stands up Foxy Cleopatra. Okay, so this is in 1975. It's been 8 years. So that means it was 1967 when they last met.
Uh-huh.
If Beyonce is the same age as her character.
Which is 20.
She was 20.
Yeah.
That means 8 years ago she was 12.
12 years ago.
And we can assume Austin was 35 either. But that's irrelevant because she was 12 years old.
I know.
And then she says something to the effect of, I only got a taste of honey, I want the whole damn beehive. What does that mean? Does that mean...
It's so upsetting. Like, I was watching that being like, Beyonce looks young in this. And then she says that, and I was like, oh my
Wait a
goodness.
Minute. Wait a minute. So...
I don't think that Mike Myers is implying that Austin Powers is a pedophile, right?
No, but...
So then we have to assume...
I am...
That is, dude, a pregnant butt,
I am
actually.
Addicted to that butt. You gotta give me the
I'm
sentence
pregnant
on the
with
end
that.
Of that butt.
But?
But if either way, it's canon. It's canon Austin Powers...
But I think that she's meant to be like, let's say like... 28?
I don't know.
She can't reach for the most agreeable age. You're like,
and added 8 to it.
She can't. That's what I mean, though. I'm trying to excuse this film, right? I'm trying. So, because I think probably what happens is you just didn't think about it, and it's just
totally.
Right?
And
totally.
There's 100% chance that if they can make Fook You and Fook Me look exactly the same, Beyonce does not look 28 in this movie. Beyonce looks exactly the age that she is.
Yeah, but it was probably written for someone else. So they probably had it in mind for they'd have an older actor.
And also for one of the other Destiny's
Children. I don't
know,
maybe Raven Simone or someone like that.
Do you really think he's like
20 now?
Oh, fuck. No. I don't want Austin to be a pedophile, but I think it's official.
So what I think it is that there's no way they ever would have... Like, you never think about, oh, what should this person's age be for this character? Especially when you're making a dumb, silly Austin Powers comedy.
It's actually interesting that you bring that up, because that's the way that Dan Harmon wrote the characters in Community. So at least one of the most successful writers does that. But anyway, no, carry on.
There's something about where you're just like, oh,
he's
just
like, you know,
get...
age is the defining characteristic of these characters, and so he'd set it up as that.
I fucking hate this. You know what it is? I've been kind of...
Be right, Alexi.
Okay, well, I think... there's too much in this. I don't understand.
Your hero's
why
a pedophile. It happened to Rolf, and it's happening again.
But this
crumbling
character
right now.
It's so strange. It's just so bizarre for me to be living in the year 2017 and then Beyonce is in Goldmember. Like, isn't that just the weirdest, like, little historical note?
What?
That was the thing that really broke her out as a star.
Because
she, before she was just, you know,
Destiny's Child.
In
Pub
Destiny's Child, which is a great. Trio.
Great band.
But it's a great group. But this is a thing that gave birth to like the greatest like popular culture goddess of like the of our generation.
It's insane. Yeah. So my thing about this movie, I think this movie is the second most effort a man has put into kissing Beyonce Knowles. The first most effort being Jay-Z in the immediate aftermath of the events that begat Lemonade.
Can we just come back to Beyonce for a second then? Because there is a rap song
by my favourite rapper.
Movie.
Dr. Evil.
Which is a parody of a Jay-Z rap song. Now, are Jay-Z and Beyonce, are they dating at this point?
Now, that's the contention about them. They claim that they weren't until... You know, was a bit older, but then the theory is, of course, that they were dating while she was like 18 years old.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And so, did Mike? Is this like this is what I mean? So you talk about like the whole thing of like he's putting a lot of effort, like you know, to kiss Beyonce. Does that mean he probably saw Jay-Z like with her at set when he was like doing rehearsals, and he's like, I've got a power play.
You think he called an audible and was like, well, wait till she sees what white boy can do.
Yeah, and he's like, well, she seems like this Jay-Z rapper. Well, you know what I can do? I can parody his thing, and then she'll love me. Like, there's some fucking pathology going on there that is, like, deeply upsetting.
It's actually the least, of all the characters that he, like, you know, plays off in the other ones, this is the least sexual vibe.
Yeah, because he's like 40 in the movie.
Yeah, it feels like he's got to feel super weird. Like they barely... they don't even sleep in the same bed and stuff like that. And it feels like they're not even sexually compatible in any way. So then when they kiss at the end, and it is just a peck, I'm always like, oh, that's unearned. Like, I didn't feel any tension between them.
Because they just feel like mates.
Yeah, they do feel like mates.
In that one video where they show them, or, you know, where Austin shows her a video that he just had emailed to her.
Yeah.
Which is also a wonderful. It's weird to remember that YouTube didn't always exist.
Yeah, it's a monkey scratching its button and sniffing it, I think.
Iconic video. Iconic.
Iconic vid.
Should we do an whole episode on that?
Yeah, exactly.
But that is such an awkward scene, because clearly that's meant to be kind of like a giggly morning after showing that these people getting along, but it's just
a 40-year-old man and a 20-year-old woman.
Yeah.
A 40-year-old man showing a 20-year-old woman.
You know that Beyonce had to show him how to turn the computer on.
No, but she was from the 70s, so she wouldn't even know what a computer
is. I'm talking about Beyonce, the actor. In between sets, he was like, so how do I get this to sync with the cloud? And she was like, oh, here, do you...
So I did a little bit of research into what Mike Myers and Beyonce's relationship was like. And in the... he said to her, when she appeared on screen during the audio commentary, he said that he's so much older than her that he can say that she was raised well. Is it refers to her? Because he's like, because he's just saying what a great person she is. Yeah, she was really raised well. Yeah, that just goes to show how much older than I am than her.
Can we stop on that for a second? Isn't one of like the hallmarks of being a child star is that you are not raised well?
Yeah.
The only way you can achieve that kind of greatness as a child star is if you are like kind of borderline like attacked and abused by your
parents. And she kind of famously is.
Yeah, like she famously like, often talks about from that. Yeah.
And her dad used to make her run and sing on a treadmill. For hours.
Yeah. Anyway. But yes,
he's wrong.
Yeah. But she's polite, apparently, is what it would seem.
But yeah,
I bet she is.
And Jay Roach said that he often observed her just watching Mike and just learning how to be like a star from Mike Myers.
Hang on, that's his observation about
Jay
her.
Roach said that. Jay Roach said that he would Mike often Mike. Delight in seeing Beyonce just kind of observe Mike and just kind of understand that quality. Mike Myers an inspiration and influence for Beyonce?
But if you're a 20-year-old, you put a 20-year-old in a room with Mike Myers circa 2002... Every 20-year-old on the fucking planet is going to think... Because you got to think, he's one of the biggest stars in the world at this point.
Yeah.
He had Wayne's World about a decade before this, which is a huge film. He then kind of goes away, you know, hosts SNL and stuff.
People are familiar with his work.
And the worst thing you could do... Yeah. Let me tell you right now, the world of Mike Check started with a four-hour rundown of Mike's discography.
I guess what I'm saying is like we are actually hitting Mike... Myers 2002 gold member at the very peak of his career.
This is the start.
But the thing is, this movie comes too late because it's parodying a genre of movie that's on the way out. So the action film, the spy film, Mission Impossible, James Bond, it's about to go into a lull. And what you see in the early 2000s is the rise of the superhero film, which is, you know, X-Men comes out, Spider-Man's around this time. It's not, you don't have the huge Marvel Cinematic Universe yet, but you have this big, and so there's a shift happening, but this is like the last remnant of this parody of this thing that's going away.
And I think this is what killed it as well, because Daniel Craig has said that the reason that his James Bond is not funny is because Austin Powers killed all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And that's why I find this film so weird, because
It's such a powerful creative cultural moment.
Yeah, it's so close to like nailing all of this stuff. And the weird thing is that it nails the look of this blockbuster film that like it. There's scenes in this that look like Skyfall, like where you've got freaking...
Did Roger Deakins step in this one? You know,
there's a scene where Dr. Evil is like encased in this glass box that's just like in Skyfall years later.
Or and just it's like got Magneto the same, and X-Men.
It's got the same twist
as... Or Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs.
The one it's referenced.
Yeah. This film has the same twist as Spectre, where you find out that Austin and Dr. Evil are brothers, just like Blofeld and James Bond in the latest James Bond film.
What you're saying is that the the copy has become the copied.
Yeah, and it's I don't think this the look of this film is right, because Austin Powers films are so beautifully stylish up until this point. And I think the costume is still stunning. Like, I think Austin's and Foxy's costumes are incredible. Like, there's this, when Austin's singing Daddy Wasn't There, that orange suit is one of the best things I've ever seen. It's so cool. And I think what they've done is they've been able to evolve Austin's costume a little bit more so it can kind of fit into the 70s. Apart from the pimp suit, that sucks. That's not good.
What about the pimpmobile?
The pimpmobile sucks. I mean, it's kind of cool. I would buy it for the money, but...
Do you guys feel... Because obviously Foxy Cleopatra is a tribute to slash parody of blaxploitation.
Yeah,
sure. And
like
the powerful...
Coffee.
Yeah, and the female protagonist.
Pretty much all Pam Grier.
From that, yeah. But... It exists in such isolation within a film that it kind of feels weird to me.
Yeah,
absolutely.
This is
like there's no other blaxploitation tropes. It's
hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.
Just they've dropped the single black character. Yes. Like,
this is the problem, though. It's a fish-out-of-water film, right? But then there are so many different fish in this film.
Yeah.
They're all, like, it's just...
And
it's
not one
so
of them is in water, except for Goldmember.
Yeah.
Yeah. But well, the one... I did a lot of research into blaxploitation a few weeks leading up to this podcast, because I wanted to be literate for this.
Oh, my God.
And I think... In the process of doing this, I kind of, like, understood what they were trying to do. And I think it's great to get this really great iconic character like... Foxy Brown and Coffee and Cleopatra Jones and kind of put it together into this one thing. And I think that's such a great foil for Austin to have a really strong, powerful, independent woman who in the blaxploitation films, these characters were often part of groups of men as well. And they'd be kind of like versions of the Black Panthers. And this was all about sticking it to the man. And they were all very... There was a grittiness to these films. Like, not exactly a realism or an authenticity, but a grittiness and a dirtiness to them. And for me, watching this now, I was so disappointed that is such a funny movie to drop Austin into a blaxploitation movie where he becomes the prude amongst all these other people.
Yeah.
I think that would be such a funny movie. And then for this to kind of just waste to have like one scene that feels kind of blaxploitation in the Studio 69... Funny joke, God. By the way, guys.
I actually forgot that was the name of that. Oh my God.
And I think that's just a waste, because that's some great comic foil and they're kind of working in that area a little bit, but it just doesn't... It doesn't come together well, and it's because the look of the film is just so polished.
Can I offer another reason as to why that element doesn't come through well? Because the lead villain in this blaxploitation is a Dutch swinger named Johan von Schmutt.
Van der Smut.
Van der Smut. Yeah.
Which I will say, Goldmember, I thought he was like one of the funniest things in this film.
He's terrific.
He absolutely is.
Like, Tom, you look shocked, Tom.
I am flabbergasted by the round the table agreement on this.
Because last time
we
talked about it, in fact, before we started this podcast, one of the inspirations was you and I making fun of Goldmember as a character.
Yeah, just texting each other, I love gold!
And I'll tell you why, because when we first meet
him... That's, like, really funny, because, like, it's such a shitty character, and he's just yelling, I love gold. That's so ironic. Like, he doesn't think that's a funny thing to say. He doesn't think it's a good character thing. He's making fun of the shallowness of the character. Like saying, I'm Dutch, isn't that weird?
Okay,
I'm from Holland, isn't that weird?
Let's run through all the character traits of this character, who is by far the most shallow character that Mike has played.
Absolutely.
With the exception of even Fat Bastard.
Yeah, Fat Bastard.
But we meet him. This is what happens in the first 5 minutes of meeting him. He comes out and says, His first line is, I'm from Holland, isn't that weird?
Yeah, that
and
is
that's,
weird.
That's weird and funny. He's got the accent. Then he bends his legs up really high, both of them.
Yep.
Then he has flaky skin. Then he says, Faja. Then he says, I love gold. Then he says that he lost
his... At that
his...
point, by the way, we are aware of his infatuation with gold.
Then he says he lost his genitalia in a bizarre smelting accident.
Which is a callback to a thing that Dr. Evil says earlier, doesn't
but
he?
But it's not even a callback. It's just staying stating
exactly
the
same thing.
Bit.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm halfway through the list.
Yeah.
Then he does his famous giggle, which is another character trait. Then he says, toit like a tiger. Then he does the schmuck and a pancake thing. Then we see the skin box where he puts his skin in.
Oh, I love the skin box.
And then he starts quoting songs and films from the 70s in dialogue.
This
They're
is one
all
thing,
his character
This is
traits.
One thing I wanted to quickly bring up, which is the gold member in that last category, in that last trait, is very similar to our own Alexi Toliopoulos.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because from saying something and then going, as played by Michael Caine.
That is what you do.
Yeah, I know. He's Mike's a big influence on me.
Yeah.
There's not denying it.
His greatest creation, gold member, is a fine influence.
So it's such a dumb character, but he has more like eccentricities than any of them.
Absolutely. And isn't it weird that there are so many different types of comedy in that list of comedy, right? So you have like the eating the skin thing is like super weird and gross and
out.
Really fucking funny. And then there's the I bend my legs behind myself to kick you in the face thing, which is so dumb and looks bad and is not executed well, and it's just like there's just so many different elements. So I think what happened was they were like, all right, what haven't we done?
Yeah.
Let's just write them all down and then we'll just do everything with this fucking character.
What's
and just
your favorite one? What do you like about gold member the most?
I think him. I think Mike Myers being self-aware that it's such a shallow character is my favorite.
So that's what you enjoy, Tom?
100% going on to the IMDb page for Austin Powers in Gold Member, clicking on the category that says quotes and reading, I love gold!
So good.
With like seven O's.
Yeah, but that's so like many O's, but also the fact that it just says Gold Member, colon, yelling.
That is my favorite catchphrase because for the reason
it's
you like it, him.
Terrible.
It's so
funny.
But that's he's admitting that, and he's saying. I think he's saying this. It's obviously a play on what's the James Bond one? Gold
finger.
Fuck.
Gold penis.
Yeah. and it's that whole thing of like this is so dumb. Like what? Just a villain who just loves gold. Like this idiot thing, and he's making fun of that. I fucking love it.
I think I like the giggle. Because it's the only thing that feels like they thought about this character, or he stumbled upon a genuine trait that came out of the character.
It's not scripted.
It's just they would have, in character, in the moment, he would have realized that Goldmember laughs like that. Like, and then it's used well. I think it's funny.
Can I ask you guys a question? Because I'm not sure about this now, but I was certain about it like 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. Is Goldmember horny?
Well, can he be? He's lost his genitals.
Yeah.
In a, might I add, a bizarre smelting accident.
Unfortunate smelting accident.
Sorry.
There's nothing bizarre
a
about
a series of unfortunate smelting accidents.
So is he horny because he's kind of... He's living in a sexual world. Mm. He's based on a sexual character that Tom will go into in a moment. But the guy... I don't know.
I think he's a bit asexual and he likes... Being, he's like it when kids are sexual before they know what that is.
So he's not sexual because he's meant to be a foil to Austin Powers, who is the most horny.
Yeah,
but Dr. Evil is also not sexual.
No,
but he's kind of horny.
He's horny for Frau.
No, yeah, that's the thing. No, he's not. Dr. Evil isn't horny. Dr. Evil will have sex though to gross you, the viewer, out.
Yeah,
like, that's the whole
point.
It's always just a,
which is also. The only reason I will have sex
is to gross me.
You,
the viewer, out.
The viewer.
Okay, so here's the thing. I think this is a profound... This is you guys mixing up horniness with ability to action that horniness by making love, making whoopee, or just plain making fuck. So these characters are all horny. Goldmember, in particular, is horny. He outsources that horniness to gold, which he loves.
Okay, so he's got a gold fetish, perhaps.
Yes, and Goldmember is actually based on... Their stated aim with Goldmember was to find a character, create a character that could outswing even Austin himself. And they did that by having Mike... as he was writing, he says, late at night when he's writing, he watches HBO's Real Sex.
Because he's horny.
And that's the thing, this movie is by far the horniest, the most obviously horny of those things. Because HBO's real sex is just porn. And the episode that he was watching is just porn because we've been able to find it on X-Hamster. And it is just people fucking at this swingers barn
in Holland.
In Holland, and this guy
now,
running
isn't
the
that
barn.
Weird?
There's barns in Holland. Isn't that weird? Smoking a pancake. Anyway.
The guy who runs it.
It's and he takes Mike took the voice and the mannerisms of this man who ran the swingers barn and made that Goldfinger member. And made that gold member.
So two things I want to ask about gold member. The first is Do you think their character creation of him was like, he's going to be the swinger who outswings Austin Powers, but he won't have a dick? Yeah! Like, do you think that was conscious?
Absolutely. That's the ultimate irony of life. Imagine being irony. Wanting to swing, but you can't because you don't have a dick.
And the second thing, you just said the smoking a pancake bit. Do you think he improv'd that and then they went and got props made?
And they reshot it.
Yeah, and they reshot it? Or do you think... Like
100%, that was on the page.
That's got to be.
I'm convinced that was on the page.
What's the point? I don't get it. I don't understand it.
It's one of the lamer gags in.
But it's just
in a movie with
also,
Fook Me and Fook You in it.
Seems to be parodying something that I had no idea existed. A lot of this film really rests on the viewer having a knowledge of the Dutch.
Yeah, and I've been to the Netherlands, and I
brag.
Yeah, I don't mean to brag, but
were
I have
gigging?
Been. I did some spots over there. Yeah, I died, guys.
Oh, no.
But they all laugh like this. No, but they smoke weed. That's a thing that everyone knows. Like, weed is legal in Amsterdam.
I had
no idea that crepes and pancakes were a thing over there.
Puffer chaise, true. I didn't realize that was the starting point of it, but I thought that them just committing to doing 5 different versions of smoking a pancake, I thought was great. But the original smoking a pancake, I was like, that's weird.
Yeah.
I'll listen to a list of things and find it funny.
Yeah, I think this is a rehash of a classic Michael Hing problem, which is similar to when you were in Edinburgh and you went to a character show by John Kearns, really excited for it, and you went there and you sat there for 5 acts of like these weird character magicians and no one else was laughing, but you were laughing incredibly hard. Mm. You told me this.
Yes.
And then what happened?
I realized I wasn't at a John Kearns show, I was at a magic show.
But I had the reason no one else was literally screaming with laughter as card trick after card trick failed was because they were all there to enjoy magic.
Yes.
And you were there on the assumption that it was ironic meta-comedy.
Yes.
And that is exactly what you're doing with a lot of this film. With smoke and a pancake. Well, you're like, this is so funny. They know how bad this is. But really, it's just a sad magician on stage asking a woman to get up on stage and she won't get up until she knows exactly what the trick is.
Exactly what happened. No, well, I'm going to push back against that, Tom, because I think you could not be unaware that parody is hack at this point, right? So Mike Myers has conquered the world of parody in Wayne's World and now with Austin Powers. And what he does is Austin Powers actually pushes off a whole genre of that sort of scary movie, like schlock parody
thing comes back,
which is sort of, I think Scary Movie's probably 1999, 2000 or something. Mm. So when he starts writing Goldmember, yes, it's because of Cash Money, but also he has to be aware that parody and parody's hack at this point. Right, so he gets to that point, he's starting to write this film, and he's so, I don't know whether it's conscious, but he has so much self-hatred in this film that you can't deny it. It's got to be ironic. It's got to be ironic.
I think there's some irony there, but I think as well, at this point, it's moved beyond parody. It's not just parody anymore because they're character comedies as well.
But he's parodying himself in this film. When Dr. Evil goes, we're going to do that bit now? We're going to do the bit where I just talk over you now? Like, he's like making
I'm making fun of the tropes of the movie.
Yeah, and then Ozzy Osbourne's in this film saying it's lazy and shit. Like, I don't...
Yeah, true. And,
that is a good gag that does not save that segment.
Can I say that is my least favorite part of the movie. That's my least Micah's touch of this movie. As soon as Ozzy comes on screen, I forgot that was going to happen. I was like, oh yeah, that was that time when
it's early 2000s.
The Osbournes was on.
Parody
yeah.
ages so badly because it's got to be so specific.
But with the meta thing, I think you're right, Hing, because this is the most meta out of all of them. This is the one...
Like, it literally has a film within a film. Like,
a film within
literally...
a film, and Fat Bastard is on wires during the fight scene, and he
that's,
acknowledges
that,
the
again,
wires.
Is
and
the parody of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is big at the time.
Yeah.
True, but this is the only one it seems like where they know they're in a movie. Like,
and they're breaking the fourth wall. You see the Wise team there.
Yeah, the Wise team is there. On Austin's list where he crosses off sex with Asian twins, it also says capture Dr. Evil in the first act. There's things like that. They seem to know they're in a movie in this one.
Now, what I'm going to... My point of this is I think it's deliberate. I don't think it makes it a better film. I think Austin Powers as a character is so confident that you want to just be like in his charm, right? Yeah. And the fact that they kind of like lean in and then kind of back out at the last minute and this stuff really kind of makes the film feel
You want him
weak.
To just lean in, go all the way and just go for that sweet patch.
I just want him... If he's going to be fucking... The guy who says, "Do I make you horny, baby?" And that's Shagadelic. Just fucking do, like, you've done it for two films. Just don't,
fuck. You just brought something to my mind. Does Austin even ask if anyone is horny in this movie? I don't think he does.
He does. He does. Young Austin does, but not Mike Austin.
Young Austin.
But I think as well, the reason that he's Austin is the least horny in this film because he's got to deal with his dad the whole time.
True.
And how can you be horny around your folks?
I absolutely want to talk about this, the dad thing.
So this is all about father issues, this movie. The whole movie is all about father issues.
That's rare for Mike.
But this is the one that's the most blatant about father issues because it's all
very
about
literal.
Mike.
It has a song that he wrote titled "Daddy Wasn't There."
Yeah,
and it's all about Mike trying to Austin trying to reconnect with his father and bridge the gap there. Mm. And he's played by Michael Caine, who in the Ipcrest file was the big influence for who Austin Powers is. So it's kind of like in Indiana Jones where they get Sean Connery to play his father.
Oh, that's exactly.
And
right,
so it's very much like staring into the mirror, and a lot of it is based on his own relation with his father.
Yeah, can add to that, the Bacharach thing at the end, just as another fatherly thing. The, you know, again, the incorporation, but I think the first on-screen appearance of Mr. Bacharach.
No, he's in all the films.
Is he?
He does a duet with Elvis Costello and Spy Shagney.
Disregard.
And
Fuck off, Tom.
So, and the whole Cockney rhyming slang scene is how he and his father will communicate in real life. And it was like very endearing to him.
Mike and his father.
Mike and his poor father, Spike, who sadly passed away, Spike Myers.
We did lose Spike.
We lost Spike back in 1991.
Can 2016 just stop?
so they would connect with him going like, hey, like, go hop over the Frog and Toad, and his friends will be like, that's weird, man. Your dad's a weirdo. So I think it made him and his dad a lot closer, that kind of thing. So he puts that exactly up on the screen. This film's also about Mini-Me trying to connect with Dr. Evil again, and Scotty Evil trying to connect with
Dr. Evil.
And Dr. Evil trying to connect with Nigel Powers towards the end of the movie, and Austin. This film has got...
It's dad overload.
It's a lot of dad.
But I think, I mean, Mike Myers, so his dad gets Alzheimer's in like the mid 80s, I think. And that's before he becomes a global superstar.
Mm.
So I think you weren't going to have like Wayne's World 3, Wayne's World's dad, right?
Well, I'm hopeful.
But I feel like this is the moment where he's like, this is one for me. You know, this is the movie I want to make. And he probably thinks, yes, he's making a funny film, but also he's trying to deal with like, he's trying to deal with the issues of, like, my dad wasn't there. And there's like 5 or 6 years of his life where his dad is there, but it's not there, you know? Yeah. And it's like, it's very upsetting.
It is so blatant.
It is so incredibly blatant. There's no other film that's so clearly been, I want to deal with my dad issues, especially because this one has that... The actor played two different characters who both find out that their dad loves them. And the dad is the same guy. Mm. Mike gets catharsis from his dad issues twice.
Yeah.
But he also gets it fucking all the time. Like, I mean, I know it'd be a huge thing. I haven't lost my father. But, I mean, everything that Mike makes is about this exact thing.
And
this one is the most blatant because one of the last lines of the film is Nigel Powers saying, I'm sorry, son. And Austin saying, I forgive you, dad. Or I love you too, dad,
again,
or something.
Maybe this is me giving the movie too much credit, but I was like, is he ironically detached from the death of his own father and he's making fun of this as a trope?
No.
It's full on earnest, right? It's fully earnest.
I think that's... It's in this film as well, it's kind of odd because it's not shoehorned in because they kind of find a way to make it feel very natural, like a natural progression for this character and this series to lead up to this point. And it's done in a way that's very sincere. And I think the Austin Powers films, for a lot of it, they have kind of played with that, the sincerity and the super irony. And this is the one where it swings more in the direction than any of the others into the sincerity and more into the direction of the irony than all the other films. And it's kind of stuck never in the middle. It's never in the middle. It's either both. It's either both things. Because I don't think there's very few scenes between Nigel and Austin that are funny. They're kind of like, they're bad entertaining jokes, and there's some sweet banter.
Didn't his dad kind of introduce him to comedy or something?
That's Monty Python stuff and also Bond movies and like Peter Flynn Sellers, movies and Peter Sellers.
Right, which is what all of these are.
I read an IMDb trivia on this that if they didn't get Michael Caine, Sean Connery was up for it.
Yuck.
Now, Sean Connery, great comedian, first of all.
I mean, the guy's funny.
He's funny, he's sexy, he's cool. He's all those things.
I'm just glad that finally someone who hits women is going to get a go in comedy.
Oh, boy.
But this one, okay, you're right. They do build up to it a little bit. And I think that begins with the sequence at Spy Academy, which I hate for a number of reasons. I wish it was not in the film. I wish they just talked about it. I wish they didn't spend 10 minutes showing us it.
This is one of those rare, like, tell, don't show moments.
Yeah, like, because...
To give him credit, I think all the performances are pretty good.
Can I counter that by saying fuck no?
Really?
Because I think it's like watching... It reminded me of being in high school and seeing the nerdy kids going like, baby, groovy, which is what it is. And I fucking hate
it. But again, I just assumed that was him making fun of all the people who were like... pointlessly imitating
him. I don't understand how you can attribute this much irony to Mike Myers when he made the Love Guru, dude. He's so much more genuine than you're giving him credit for.
I think that's true. Like, he's the guy's so my hero, but King, I don't know what's wrong with you. It's so refreshing and scary for me for someone to be more insane than me on this podcast.
Everyone
is you.
I assume that whole scene was him being like, "Oh, these fucking losers who were like, no wife," kind of.
No way.
And then he was like, "I'm gonna make fun of them."
The feeling I think would have been they're gonna love seeing young Austin.
And
George Lucas did.
They are gonna, you know what they love? Let's give them everything they love, but without the main thing they love.
Yeah.
Let's give them all the words, but not
if we could do all the empty catchphrases without the comedic performance of a movie star.
Oh my god,
Dr. Evil is, I think, the creepiest thing I've ever seen on screen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen
he's so smooth, and I hate him.
He looks like an X-Men character.
He looks exactly like Dr. Xavier in early
all of them.
Film.
They all say things that have been echoed in the other movies, like who throws a cupcake, honestly, which pissed me off because Dr. Evil doesn't say that line. That's an Austin Powers line.
That scene is a total victory.
Well, they're brothers. They're brothers.
Foreshadowing. And Austin, like, fucking his teacher. Everything about it bummed me out.
That child fucking is so uncomfortable to me.
But also, that teacher is like a teacher. She's not that's another weird pedo-y moment. Like, it's not excusable just because she's hot.
And she was hot, I'll say that. I'll admit, that's the scene that made me horny. But I also was not into it in any way.
There's a documentary feature on the Blu-ray where it's all about these young guys and getting their molds, and there's like to fit into the characters. And there's this one thing that's real weird where Jay Roach, they're filming it when he tells them they've got the part, and because they're so self-conscious about being on camera, they're like, "Oh, great, cool." Because you could tell they want to be, they're really excited, but because they're being filmed, they're like,
trying
17
to
or something, they don't know how to act.
I really like this scene, and I only really enjoyed it because I was watching this and being like, imagine if you got the call.
Yeah.
Okay.
Imagine if you and Alexi got the call saying you are playing young Austin and young Dr. Evil.
I'd be young fat bastard. That's all I could say.
They should have got the same actor to play both of them.
Yeah, that's such an insane decision.
Fucking real actors. I don't know who these kids are.
Well, they're both currently actors.
But, get
still.
Your Zac Efron's in there.
Get the Stranger Kids things in.
Yeah, get the Stranger Kids
in there. They're not born yet. They weren't even born.
Does Rob Lowe play young number two?
No, in Spy Shagney plays young number two.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So this man is different... playing young Rob Lowe.
Yeah. Okay. Because I was like, because I just looking at that
pre-sex tape.
That character really peaks in like that early middle age, and then just kind of dimes. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, he starts out as this young, precocious number two at Spy Academy. Then he becomes Rob Lowe,
like
very
hot,
very hot guy, and then he becomes alleged murderer Robert Wagner.
So he really peaks at that.
Yeah,
Rob
so
Lowe
you want to get him right at Rob Lowe.
There is a deleted scene in this movie where Robert Wagner as number two is dressed as a woman, and it's clear that he just fucked young Rob Lowe number two.
It's a deleted scene.
It's a deleted scene.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's I mean this. I mean.
That's
a- I'm fucking gobsmacked by that. Why wasn't that in
that's
the cut?
That's a nightmare.
That is a nightmare.
Is there any... There's a couple of other scenes that I want to call out that I thought that actually did make me laugh quite a little bit. Actually, quite a lot of bit. I'll say it. But there's...
Well, how about we do that? Let's ask each other what our favourite moment was.
Yeah.
And let's try and end positive.
Yeah, you start off, Alexi.
Micah's Touch. What was your
Micah's Touch? So my Micah's Touch, they're both callbacks to some of the sight gags, mainly from Spy Shagney. Michael, did you take pages of notes that you're flipping through?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's
absolutely
fantastic.
I wrote like 6 pages
Thank
of
you.
Notes on this.
Well, that's
Thank
what
you.
Made me horny, baby, was hearing Michael flipping through multiple pages of notes just
I wrote
then.
Down... There are so many things. I wrote down... talking about the rap, I wrote like several sentences about how it could have been a parody about how Eminem was a white guy taking over rap.
Oh, you're so
you
wrong.
Are giving so much credit in all the wrong places.
So my Micah's Touch favorite moment. I love the scene with Mini-Me and Austin in the doctor's office with Neil Mullarkey, who is Mike's former. Yeah.
Shadow scene.
Yeah, the shadow scene.
Or the on when office. He's on his shoulders.
Both of those. I'll count that as one because I think they're both so funny. Just because that's actually Vern Troyer. Mike actually is on Vern Troyer's shoulders, and they've got
and
like a
wires.
Whole wire crew kind of following them around, and they've painted all that out. And I think that's just so funny to see them play off each other like that.
It is sort of an inspired gag.
I think it's great, and it's got those nice touches where if it was a simpler, like two less competent creators, they would have just been on like a plain flat surface, but they make it like actually work and feel more authentic by having it as like this, like an imperfect surface that they're on, like that kind of curtain. And also the guy
that's absurd.
No, that's I think that's true. I think that's true because if it was just any
it's
other
100%
movie,
100% not, dude.
Okay, how dare you? I think it's true. And
what was your favorite bit of this bit though? Does this bit peak for you?
It is when the henchman, who is the same henchman from Spy Shagney, it's the same actor who's watching them, his reactions to it all. And I think the part where it kills me is where Mini-Me sprays the apple juice in a very fierce way into the cup. Both of those are my things. And also,
even
as
though
a
that's
note,
the second piss joke in 5 minutes.
I also love the first piss joke. It was my second favorite gag.
My favorite piss joke? Probably Donald Trump. Most recently. That's my favorite.
But
picture.
I think as well, that actor that is the henchman in that scene, he is who plays the Mike characters when Mike is one of the other characters in the scene.
Huh? Oh, he's the stand-in.
He's the stand-in, but he's apparently great at them as well. And yeah.
Okay, Mike so your favorite credit. Moment is Mini-Me pretending to pretending to be Austin's dick.
Yeah. Right. I think that's my favorite scene in the whole film.
Hing, what was yours?
Okay, this is a very, very specific moment.
Okay.
And it's hard. I'm trying to... I've really had to cross the things off my list since that you've told me that this film is not nearly as clever as I thought it was.
Did you think that Fook You and Fook Me could have been like...
Absolutely. Because it's the kind of thing that... Because they're making fun... It's like Felicity Shagwell, right? Dixie Enormous. It's like there's these terrible names... Mm. And it's making fun of the Bond thing is what I thought.
Yeah. Okay.
But maybe I'm wrong.
I think it is that, but
also real bad.
Thought it was Mike Myers solving racism.
Yeah.
Maybe, who knows?
I think it is that, but it's not as good or funny as you think it might be.
I thought, yeah. Okay. So this is, and with Mike Myers, it's always the little things, you know? Yeah. It's always the little moments where you're just like, that's fucking genius.
The little things like Vern Troyer.
Oh boy. So it's this. It's the Austin Powers fat bastard fight scene that ends with the wire breaking, and he's just sort of standing in the air. And then Foxy Cleopatra pulls out a gun, shoots the wire, and Fat Bastard falls to the floor. She then walks over, puts her boot on Fat Bastard, and she goes like, "You're under arrest, sugar," or whatever. And then Mike Myers, this is shot of the boot on his chest, and Fat Bastard, he just lets his tongue out a little bit,
yeah,
and just tries to lick the boot.
That's a good scene.
It's just this one moment where you're like, okay, so Fat Bastard he's trying to sexually lick the boot.
Because as we've covered in this show, Mike's best comedy comes from horniness, always.
And it's just like, what a fucking weird, like, why?
Like, he's just decided, he's like, oh yeah, that's right, all my characters are horny. Yeah. He's not just fat, he's also horny. I gotta insert something in this.
I just wanna know if that's in the script or if it's improvised. And if it's improvised, what the fuck is Beyonce thinking when Mike Myers...
Well, it would have been a stand-in.
Well, she's in awe of Mike the whole time, so I think she would have been delighted to be part of the joke.
Wait, you don't think that was Beyonce's foot?
No way. They wouldn't have wasted a shot on Beyonce like that. I mean, I've worked on some sets.
Yeah, but she's not Beyonce. She's, you know...
Cam's filmed a lot of feet.
Yeah. So why do you think why didn't you think they would have got Beyonce to do it?
I don't think they would have got all her angles and then gone, all right, go sit down and bring in the stand-in.
No, you know? I don't think so. They're having fun.
She's 20 years old. She's having a great time on this film.
All right, fine. I'll go with you on this one. It's Beyonce's fault.
I reckon we are wrong.
I'm going to interview where Beyonce talks about this. Because Beyonce, she would be... Her perspective on this entire... Fuck, I wish I'd done
it. I've watched all the interviews I could find Beyonce talking about Austin Powers in Goldmember.
Yeah.
I hate saying the full title.
Just call it Austin Pussy if you're having trouble saying it.
Call it Crack My Shit Up. Yeah.
Oh, God. But so, I've only seen contemporary interviews with her, like of the time.
On Letterman or whatever.
Yeah, of the time or for the DVD.
So when she's Letterman. When she's like on the junket. When she's
what I've seen is Rove.
Yeah.
She did and Rove.
She did Rove doing this, and not an informative interview on Rove's part.
Is she just being. Because, I mean, Beyonce's.
She's a normal human being, which is the most baffling thing about seeing Beyonce in this film, is she's a normal human being. She's ranting like a 20-year-old person. She's like, yeah, it was really fun and exciting. And she seems like really positive and just like very approachable.
She's very charming in this film.
Yeah, it's
I'd be friends with her. I reckon I could be a friend. What? And Jay-Z. The whole crew.
It's a hard knock life.
I actually think that I didn't even notice that scene, but you describing it to me is really funny.
It's great. It's a great. I think that's a great Micah's touch.
That's a good one.
That's terrific. What Tom, about you? Do you have one?
I think the first time I watched this movie, the gag that's
pronounced movie, by the way.
Please be respectful of the genre that we're working on.
Sorry, guys.
You fucking idiots.
You're like, oh.
No, okay. I didn't. Keep on going.
Okay, so first, I loved that scene.
Yeah,
I loved the "No, I didn't. Daddy wasn't there for me." That is really funny to me. But the first gag that made me really laugh out loud properly and be like, "Oh, this movie is going to rule!" is when Steven Spielberg, just after saying, for one, the gag where he's like, where Austin says, "Oh, I do have some notes," and then it cuts back to Steven Spielberg and he's holding his Oscar. He's like, "Oh, really? I think my friend here might have something to say about that." But the thing that made me laugh is that then when the music hits and the dancing starts, you see Steven Spielberg shrug, and then there's a cut, and then Steven Spielberg, or like a stunt double dressed in exactly his clothes, does so many flips.
Like backflips.
Yeah, I like that too.
When I was a kid, I was convinced that was a real Steven Spielberg. Like, it took me a long time to figure out that's not
you're like, oh,
him.
It's a bummer they didn't get coverage of his face during those flips.
And for a long time as well.
Do you think Steven said that shot was okay? Because that seems out of character.
As a kid as well, I spent so long trying to figure out if that was the real Queen or not as well. Because it wasn't in the credits.
It's so obviously what the not the
And now when I watch it, I'm like, are you crazy?
You have her on your money card.
You can get a picture of money.
You don't even have to buy a picture of her. You can be like, Oh,
it's not her.
Yeah, it's completely
not her. Actor has played the Queen in many things.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure she's in Ali G in the House and the Naked Gun movies.
And The Crown on Netflix.
She's The Crown. She played Helen Mirren.
And the other
think at the time I was more familiar with her than I was the real Queen, because those were all the movies I was watching when I was that age.
You'd be missing the Christmas Day address. I also really liked the point and laugh. That was super funny to me. And especially that old man janitor. But funnier than him to me is all those people in suits and evening gowns pointing and literally screaming with laughter at someone because their dad didn't turn up
to a knighthood.
To see them being knighted.
To visit being knighted.
That is pretty funny. I think mine is, and I think I'm coming at it from the Hing angle this time. You know when the whole like Scotty don't scene, which is clearly like a callback to Zip It and Shh from the other two. I love that they go for it again. I love that everyone in the scene knows it's been done twice already. And I think the main thing I love about it is that Dr. Evil isn't even committing to the premise of saying Scotty don't anymore. He's not even going Shh or Zip It. He's just making noises. He's on like, and then he does that one where he goes, oh, who am I? I don't know. That gets me every time.
That made me laugh really hard. Dr. Evil is so fucking funny.
He's a brilliant character, and that whole family relationship between all of them as like this weird office family is the best thing of all of these films I've come to realize.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, yeah, this is the funniest that Dr. Evil has been in this movie because he's a total goofball. He's like as funny, as much of a goofball as Austin Powers is in this movie. There's a scene where he's wearing a trucker hat and talking like a fucking...
It's Convoy.
Yeah, like Convoy. Yeah,
they're doing
Convoy.
A parody of Convoy.
But like, why? He just has a trucker hat for that one scene.
Yeah. It's not even a scene. It's like one shot of him, one shot of Goldmember.
And also my other favorite Dr. Evil bit is when Goldmember asks if he can paint his Yoo-Hoo gold, and Dr. Evil wheels himself over for like 30 seconds and leans in. How about no, you crazy Dutch bastard? That's great.
What lines from this movie were most quoted around you growing up?
That one was one of
them. No, the fat bastard and like, do you find me sexy? Do you like my titties? That was
oh, look at my titties. That's pretty funny.
That's like, that was 100% all the time.
Asking do you find me sexy is so funny. It's still good. Faja, people said Faja a bunch.
Yeah, they say it a lot on the Little Dum Dum podcast.
Do they?
Yeah, they refer to Nick Cody's mum and dad as Faja and Masha, which is just weird.
What else has stayed around?
I had Toyt Like a Toyger.
Oh, yeah.
That was, and it was weird because we all agreed that the film wasn't great, but there was just one kid at high school who would constantly be like, toy like a toy girl.
See, I think that's one of the weakest moments of of the whole Goldmember, like of all of Goldmember's funny bits. That's the, I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah, who cares about toy like a toy girl? Yeah. I'm sorry, it sucks. But I love Gold. I think you just reminded me, earlier on, was one of the impetus for starting this because it is such a bad catchphrase, but the way he says it is so good.
So good.
So good.
I think that's what we've talked about Mike before, is that all of his characters have catchphrases, but they all make sense for it. Like, it's not just someone going like, wah blah blah bee doo, anything like that. Even when it is,
that's
him saying
that's Adam
something
Sandler's
like that.
Catchphrase,
by the way. But they all make sense for the characters to have these catchphrases because they're all very performative people.
Yeah.
And it makes total sense. I think that's why these movies work in the long run.
Can I just bring up one last thing? I know we're wrapping up, but I just want to bring up one.
And we are going to wrap, by the way. That's how we
that's how we end it. We do a summary wrap, and we all do a really good job of it, so it's up to you
two. My name's Lexi, and I'm here. So one thing we haven't talked about was that the owners of the rights to James Bond sued over this film. Did you guys know this?
Really?
No.
Oh, this was over the word you love.
Yeah, over Goldmember. So they
Shagadelic?
No.
Austin Pussy?
You go.
Oh, I believe it was because they wanted to name it Austin Pussy.
Yes.
But they were not allowed to. Then they lost a case. They had to change it to Goldmember.
That was going to be the name of this
that
movie?
That was going to be Austin Powers in
Austin Pussy.
Austin Pussy.
It was going to be Spy Shagman was originally going to be called Austin Pussy.
Oh my God.
No, so they sued over that, right? And then the settlement was that Mike Myers had to do another film for this studio.
Yeah.
And as a result, that's how he got Cat in the Hat.
Oh,
wait, but also Cat in the Hat is because he He decided not to do the Sprockets movie because the script wasn't up to snuff. But he also wrote the script for that movie. So it's a lot of the Mike Myers self-hating.
I read that part of the settlement of this was actually that they had to screen the trailer for the new James Bond.
Sorry. I'm getting mistaken with all the lawsuits against Mike.
Had to settle the Austin Pussy Gold member title contention by
showing the trailer.
Agreeing to show the trailer for no money.
Yeah.
Before Gold member started.
What trailer? Casino Royale.
Yeah. Oh. For the new Bond film that was
coming out. It would have been Die Another Day.
Yeah, yeah. It was still in the shithouse era.
I think what we've learned from this discussion is that we're not anywhere near finished talking about Goldmember.
Yeah.
I think we need to do another part two.
I'm still obsessed with this movie.
I think we might have four more pages of notes
we haven't even touched yet.
For now, let's just go around and check it.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm going to have to check it inconclusive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I watch this movie again, by the time we got to the end, I watched the whole credits. I stuck around for them.
And you stayed in the theater because you hired a theater.
Did you stay for the scene where Austin gets given the Infinity Stone?
How does it tie into the rest of the Mike Cinematic Universe?
At the end of the film, where the Alfie, the song from the Michael Caine movie Alfie from the 1970s. As covered by Susanna Hoffs, who is Jay Roach's wife and member of Ming T and the Bangles, when she sings What's It All About, Austin, I teared up a little bit. because I've devoted like the last few months of my life to Mike Myers, and my love for Austin Powers has reached this point where I'm like, this is my favorite thing ever.
Was this finally the call to action to change?
And it was the opposite of that. I was like, wow, this might be the last time I ever see these characters. Because I don't know if Austin 4 is ever going to happen.
Well, Austin 4, he's talking about it.
And it's rumored. I started weeping a little bit, and then I watched the... it really...
There's nothing funnier than you crying in the credits of Goldmember.
That makes me horny, baby.
I think I have to check it, and I check it. It's iconic. I can't say good or bad, but this movie to me is iconic.
I think it transcends.
Yeah.
I can't say it's good or bad. It's both. It's just like us.
Yeah. I'm still going to back into, I think it could be unrealized genius. I think it's parodying things. It's such high level parody. It doesn't even realize the things it's making fun of half the time. I think if you give it enough goodwill, you can really
Your
find
death
some,
of the authoring.
Yeah. You can really find some fucking good nuggets in this.
Wow, thank you so much for joining us, guys. That felt epic, and we barely even got through any of our notes. I've got so many more.
Yeah.
I mean, we might have to do a part two. I'm not sure.
I think so.
I'm going to go home and watch Goldmember again.
I feel like it's going to be the next movie I'm going to watch is Goldmember.
Did your listeners enjoy this? I don't
know. There aren't any listeners.
We don't put these up.
Yeah, all we do is send them to Tom on a thumb drive, and he's playing mail, and he loves it.
They play him outside Will Anderson's house as he sleeps.
Thank you so much for joining us though, guys. Either of you like to plug some stuff you got coming up?
I feel like I have nothing. I don't have anything.
You've got some
actually.
Good podcasts.
Yeah,
fantastic.
You're a pod boy.
Yeah, well, we've got Pretty Good Home. We got Dragon Friends. One where we go through classifieds and the internet. It's real funny. And the other one where we play Dungeons and Dragons. They're both comedy.
They're very funny. They're great podcasts.
And the other thing is, I don't know. But when does this come out? I don't know.
Why are you getting self-doubting now?
No, because I've got.
You're feeling very Mike Myers right now. A lot of self-hate.
Yeah. Well, my comedy special is on ABC this weekend. So if you want, if it's up this weekend, watch it.
Yeah, absolutely. Watch
it's on ABC 2, so watch that, please.
King's one of the greats. Check it out.
Oh, God, I hate myself.
I'll plug you for you. You're very funny, and I can't wait to watch your comedy special.
Friend of comedy?
I'd say you're one of the best friends of comedy. Tom?
I don't know. I'm doing shows at festivals, but otherwise just I'll be posting stuff on Twitter and you can see there because I'm working on some other stuff.
And what are your your Tom Walker is good.
Yeah,
and
your
Hingers. And you are, this is Alexi. And I am Cameron James.
Mm-hmm.
I am.
None of us got our original names except maybe Hing.
Yeah. And we are Mic Check Pod. And thank you so much for listening, horny babies. Please tweet at us. Please Facebook us. Please give us 5 stars on iTunes and recommend a spin-off you'd like to hear. We've had some good ones lately.
Yeah, recently we had one from Molly and she suggested Now Buscemi, Now You Don't.
Yeah, all about the films of Steve Buscemi.
And I would love to do a spin-off.
I think we're going to have to do a spin-off about that one. And keep listening, keep being horny, and let us know your thoughts on Goldmember. Is it good? Is it bad?
0439 757 777.
Yeah, please text in.
But we're not over yet. We've still got a few Mike Myers movies to go.
We got a few more to go. Thanks, baby.
It's my check. It's my check. The podcast.